Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week, Brad Friedman. Brad is an investigative blogger, journalist, broadcaster, troublemaker, and muckraker at bradblog.com, which you should visit frequently. He is a contributor to salon.com and other good sites, and a host on KPFK Pacifica Radio of Bradcast and of the nationally syndicated Green News Report with co-host Desi Doyen. And we will talk about that among other topics. Brad Friedman, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Great to be here, David. Thanks for having me, sir.
It's great to have you. It's great to see all the reporting you're doing, occasionally even a victory, one in Ohio that we'll get to, but generally horrible news. And I was on your radio show not long ago talking about the newly revived war in Iraq, arguing against it. I haven't seen any reporting from you since, and I'm wondering what your thinking is these days.
Well, let me be clear. When you say you were arguing against it, I was not arguing for it. I was rather trying to push you and your, because you're always smart, you're always brilliant on this, and you know the idea that we need to avoid war rather than get into more war. Matter of fact, I think I called you the conscience of the broadcast. I love turning to you in cases like this. But, you know, in this case, the specific reason I had brought you on was to say, well, what do you do, as had been the case, this is already a couple of months ago, what do you do when, as President Obama claimed, you've got these bad guys, in this case, it was ISIS, surrounding a mountain with a bunch of Yazidis on top, a group that I think many Americans hadn't heard of, who were facing, you know, impending doom as these folks were climbing up the mountain and looking at genocide. And does the U.S. have a responsibility to do something if we can do something, even if that's means using military force? And I'm still not certain about that question. I still, you know, wonder, what do we do if we can stop a genocide? Do we have a responsibility to do so? That said, what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on with this ISIS group, doesn't necessarily appear to be the genocide that we were talking about. It could be, but the president has not made the case. It's just sort of assumed, oh, ISIS, bad guys, they behead. Let's go and, drop bombs everywhere. That'll solve it. You know, there's not a real debate about what's going on, about what we should be doing. It's just, you know, the same old playbook. Bad guys out there, let's go and attack them. And to that end, by the way, I ain't playing. One of the reasons you said you haven't seen a lot of reporting from me on it is because I'm not going to give ISIS the pedestal that I think they crave, that clearly they crave. You know, they're great at PR. They're great at getting the word out about how terrible they are. They want the U.S. to do exactly what the U.S. is doing. They want Americans and the world to be frightened of them, and I'm not playing that game. I'm not giving them that pedestal. I'm not giving them that honor of being frightened of them. I'm just not playing, and so to that extent, I'm largely ignoring them, by and large, if that makes sense, because I think we elevate them to a position they do not deserve, and we give them exactly what they want when everybody freaks out about it. And that's what we've been seeing for the past couple of months from not just the politicians, but also from the mainstream corporate media and, frankly, the non-corporate media as well.
Well, I applaud you for refusing to be ISIS's PR man and for recognizing that they want a U.S. war, and they have a one-hour movie openly advocating that the U.S. do what it's doing. But the U.S. is doing what it's doing, and it's our responsibility to stop it. And we can sort of look back now and say there were not nearly as many people on that mountain as they said. The ones that were there didn't want to leave. The bombing didn't happen around the mountain. It happened around the oil wells. That whole story, even if we still believed it, they've moved on. And they just used it to get into another war, and now they're just escalating the war. And, you know, at some point it becomes our responsibility to say to Congress, maybe it's not a re-election strategy to run away and refuse to vote yes or no on a new war while sending arms to the same side of the war that your president is lawlessly bombing. We want to have a voice here.
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple of points in that. You say it's our responsibility to stop it. I don't know if it's our responsibility to stop it. I suppose it depends how you and I see ourselves. I'm a journalist. My responsibility is to report the facts on the actual facts as they exist, so that we can have an informed electorate and an informed democracy, and a decision can be made about how we should proceed. But that requires an informed public. That requires a commander-in-chief in this case to make the case for what he's doing, and that requires a Congress to meet their constitutional duties, requirements to stand up and vote for or against this action. Almost none of that is happening. So, you know, I'm not going to say we should or shouldn't be moving forward, with military action, at least not now. What I'm saying is we deserve to know what's going on, and we deserve a representative democracy that actually represents us. Now, you know, the bulk of the American people seem to be in favor of bombing ISIS, so long as we stay up in the air, even though they know it's not ultimately going to work, not going to solve the problems that it portends to solve. But for now, that's what the electorate wants. Now, it may be because they're simply not informed, because they don't listen to David Swanson's show enough, which everyone should. But that's where we are. And so, yes, pushing these people to take their constitutional duty to vote up or down on this, even if I disagree with the end results of the vote, I think that's important. And informing the American public about what's actually going on, that too is important. And really, we've got almost none of that happening, as usual, in this country.
Well, when the public believes it's going to endanger them and it should be done, even though it's going to make things worse, at least pointing out their insanity to them, I think, is an educational step. Speaking of...
Agreed. No, absolutely agree.
Speaking of insanity, you and Desi have been reporting on our, our species, relationship with the planet we're on, and we seem to be heading for disaster. What's your perspective at this point on?
Yes, somewhat of a larger story that should take precedence over all of this nonsense, over what is essentially a regional threat at best in the Middle East when it comes to ISIS. We've got a planetary crisis, a planetary threat that Desi Doyen and I have been covering on the Green News Report. It's nationally syndicated. A radio feature out to fine progressive radio stations around the country, if and when you can find them. We've been doing this for 5 years and trying to say, yes, this is probably the most important story, not just of our time, but of ever. And it's remarkable the way the corporate media is simply has been ignoring this story, ignoring the climate crisis for at least 5 years since we've been covering it on the Green News Report. And they continue to today, even though, as you saw, Dave, just a week or so ago, we had the largest march in history, the largest climate march in history in New York City, some 400,000 people marching through Midtown Manhattan. They had to cut off the march before everybody was able to get through because there was such a huge crowd. This is something that people care about. But, you know, it's the same story. If you look back to the Iraq War, over 10 years ago now, you also had the largest marches in history, and those were also ignored by the corporate media. The corporate media right now makes so much money off of the fossil fuel industry that it is far easier for them to simply ignore this crisis rather than risk all the money that they receive. If you watch, you know, whether it's Fox, CNN, MSNBC, I mean, between every commercial break, you will see one of these fossil fuel companies lying to America about their clean coal, about their, fantastic fracking, about whatever it is. The media relies on these fossil fuel companies and the quote-unquote debate about global warming, such as there is one, it doesn't exist. It is an incredible and incredibly successful propaganda operation by the fossil fuel companies, to protect the profits of the owners of that company, period. When it comes to the scientific questions about global warming and climate change, there really is none, at least not as far as is it existing and is man contributing to it. There is no debate. But because the fossil fuel companies are looking at their profits disappearing, they are pretending there is one. They are pretending the science is still unsettled and how much of it is man's fault. And even if it is our fault, there's really nothing we can do about it. It's about protecting oil, coal, and gas, period. And the media, and that's I consider myself the media, need to shout that out loud and clear, even if it gives us sad, to ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers. We're going to call them out for being the liars and propagandists that they are, and hopefully we'll find a courageous politician somewhere, somehow, at some point, to actually meet this crisis with the, you know, with the political will that it really, really requires. Because if we don't take action soon, it's game over. In, you know, 5-10 years, it may be too late, no matter what we do. And that may be the case already. So I think this is a huge story. I think it needs to be covered more by everyone constantly. And as usual, the important stuff is not being covered at all.
We're speaking with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com and of the Green News Report. I did see in the past week or two since that march and Roots Action, where I work, and lots of other groups were part of this, that a number of major companies have been forced to stop funding the lobby group ALEC, and this includes yeah. Google and Facebook and so forth, have stopped funding ALEC's climate change denial because of public pressure. And I think we're probably going to need 2-4% of the public to start getting much more active than that, rather than waiting for a politician to save us, because I don't see that as terribly likely. I was very interested in one of the stories in your latest Green News Report, where a futurist is predicting in 20 years we'll have free solar energy equipment. Now, that seems like the bitterest of ironies, given that, as you just told us, 20 years of continuing down this path, we may be beyond the point of any possible return.
You know, that's right. And just to be clear, the reason we would be beyond the point of any possible return is because once these global warming gases get into the atmosphere, gases like carbon dioxide, no matter what we do to curb emission, that carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for centuries. So, you know, at some point, it simply becomes too late, you know, to stop the impending disaster. At that point, it's just, oh, how do we mitigate it? How do we survive it? But yeah, I mean, the irony, you know, when it comes to things like solar power, look, 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, they had created a solar array in the desert of Egypt. That solar array was up and working until they discovered, oh, we've got oil here, and we can sell that, and we can sell that everywhere. We can make a lot more money rather than this free energy falling from the sky. So they moved to oil, and they took the solar panels, such that they were 100 years ago, and they created weapons out of them to wage war. So this is a technology that's been around for a long time in one form or another. If American ingenuity is actually put to it, you know, we can get off of this poisonous fossil fuel. We can move to solar energy. We could have done it long, long ago. Countries who aren't crippled with political nonsense the way we are making these changes. You know, Germany is doing it. On some days, they get more than 50% of their power from solar energy. And they're way north of the U.S. They get way less sunlight than us. So it's about, you know, the political will, but the political will is now blocked by the fossil fuel companies, particularly since 2010, when Citizens United happened. Remember, before that, David, you actually had Republicans like John McCain, like Sarah Palin, Mitt Romney, George W. Bush, all of these guys calling a global warming a crisis, calling for cap and trade as the, you know, potential solution to it. Now it's as if none of that exists. They're all in a world of make believe and pretend, and we are in big trouble. And I can tell you that right here from the ground out in California, where we are in the worst drought ever on record. And we are in the middle of, we've just completed the warmest year on historic record in California. And we are in the middle of what is shaping up to be the new warmest year on record in California. So this is bad. This is a crisis. And that's, of course, just in California. This is bad. We need to take action. But you're right. The politicians ain't going to do it. It's going to require the people standing up in some fashion or another, raising holy hell. It's all about their voices. It's all about democracy, such as we can find it. And that's why we cover what we do cover. As far as, you know, green news and democracy and elections at bradblog.com, because that's the only thing, ultimately, that we are going to be able to change anything by, at least peacefully.
I had not heard that story about Egypt turning solar panels into weapons. I think it's a perfect metaphor for where we are misplacing our priorities. I do think we're almost forced into nonviolent direct action and mass resistance by the urgency of the crisis, regardless of our personal preferences. But I do think that we have to have elections. And your voice at BradBlog has been the leading one, I think, for years now on the threat to credible, verifiable elections in the United States, as well as such issues as voter suppression and discouragement of participation in elections. Where do you think the hottest issues are in that struggle at this point?
Well, we've got a mess right now as we head towards the November midterms. We got a mess in a whole bunch of states, and it's all about, right for the moment, it's all about Republicans keeping people from being able to vote at all. They are restricting early voting hours and days. They are making it harder for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of voters to be able to cast their vote at all through these polling place photo ID restrictions that are now being enacted in places like Texas and Arkansas and Wisconsin. Election 2014 seems to be happening right now in the courts because you've got cases in state after state in Ohio and Wisconsin, Texas, North Carolina, you know, where finally the federal government is taking some action to try to block some of these horrific laws. For example, up in Wisconsin, if this photo ID restriction goes forward, the one that Scott Walker and the Republicans have been pushing for years now, some 300,000 legally registered voters will be unlikely to be able to cast their vote at all. And a U.S. District Court, for example, had blocked that law. Had Judge Lynn Edelman wrote a fantastic ruling in the case, 70 pages, detailing how, you know, 300,000 people do not have the photo ID that would now be required under this law to vote. And back in 2010, Scott Walker, the governor out there, he only won his race by about 150,000. So if you can keep those 300,000 people from being able to cast your vote, Scott Walker wins what is now a too-close-to-call re-election race. That's what this is about. It has nothing to do with voter fraud. There is no notable voter fraud in Wisconsin or anywhere else around the nation. Brennan Center's Justin Levitt just came out a few weeks ago with a report. He has been tracking this now for a decade. He says in the last 14 years, he has been able to find 31 cases of potential voter fraud that might have been stopped, maybe, by a polling place photo ID restriction out of 1 billion, billion with a B, votes cast around the country over the past 14 years in all 50 states. This is a scam. This is a pretend scam to try to keep Democratic-leaning voters from casting their vote, period. And it's no longer even about, you know, counting the votes and making sure they count them accurately. At this point, it's, you know, trying to make sure that voters can get in the door, no matter who they want to vote for. So, I mean, it's really a terrible fight. It's a terrible fight before the election, you know, to make sure people who want to vote get to vote. And then the fight continues after the election, to make sure that those who did vote actually have their votes counted, counted accurately, and counted in a way that they can know that those votes have been counted accurately. It seems like this fight continues on now for decades. And by the way, a lot of the supposedly progressive public interest groups, folks like Think Progress, they don't get it either. They're out there right now calling for internet voting, which is 100% unverifiable, which, you know, computer security experts across the globe are begging, democracies not to move to internet voting because it simply cannot be made secure. I'm against it because it simply cannot be overseen by anyone. And yet you've got Think Progress, the supposedly progressive outfit, calling for internet voting and describing something that you know well, David, the Diebold touchscreen systems that have been used in Maryland for the past, 12 or 13 years now. They are 100% unverifiable. They have been hacked time and time again. Think Progress is calling those 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems made by Diebold up in Maryland, they are calling them tamper-proof, as if nothing has happened over the past decade, David. It is absolutely maddening.
In defense of Think Progress, they are a little bit occupied at the moment promoting an eternal war in the Middle East. So they've got a lot on their plate.
Well, they do. And let me just also toss this out, because I've had various problems with Think Progress over the years. There are some folks at Think Progress who are still doing really good work. Their climate progress section, Joe Rome, is top-notch. Ian Millhiser is doing great reports on justice. So it's not the entire outfit, but their new editor and some of the journalists there are just a disaster.
Really. Yeah, no, there's no question. They've got good people and good reports and well-meaning people, but quite misguided on some quite important topics. I was struck also, you mentioned in Wisconsin restricting voting with a photo ID requirement. There was another article on your blog, if I'm not mistaken, about people who would be parading around with guns intending to discourage voting by that means. Rather gives away the motivation, doesn't it?
Well, listen, when it comes to Scott Walker up in Wisconsin, none of this can be a surprise. We saw what happened in his 2012 recall race. He's the only governor who's ever, quote-unquote, won a recall challenge. But in that case, you had all kinds of people, Scott Walker supporters, who were arrested, harassing people who were gathering signatures for his recall, who were taking petitions and tearing them up, who were roughing up petitioners, who were calling them with death threats in the middle of the night. Some of them were arrested for this. This guy, Scott Walker, is a thug. His supporters are thugs. So I would not put anything past the Scott Walker supporters. Unfortunately, in the state of Wisconsin at this point, yeah, it's going to be ugly, and that's just in one little state. We've got at least 50 of them to keep our eyes on this year.
Wasn't there something of a court victory in the state called Ohio that you reported on not long ago?
Yeah, there was, and this is one of the one of the few places we can actually point to some good news as we're heading towards the midterms. The Sixth Circuit Court in Ohio and a district court judge by the name of Peter Economist has denied the Republicans time and time again their attempts to make it harder to vote, to shorten early voting, to get rid of Sunday voting, when a lot of African Americans turn out right before the Sunday before the election for the Souls to the Polls Sunday to do their voting. They're trying to do away with Golden Week, which is the one week when voter registration actually overlaps with early voting, so you can both register and vote on the same day. They have tried to roll back these reforms year after year after year, since 2005, since Ohio responded to the 2004 disastrous election to make it easier to vote in Ohio. And it worked. And, of course, that's why Republicans are now turning around trying to undo those reforms. But the good news is every time they go to court or they pass new laws to restrict these laws, plaintiffs in Ohio go to court to try to stop it. And so far, they have been successful, and the court continues to order Republicans, at least in Ohio, to restore those early voting opportunities. And, you know, the good guys are for now winning for change in Ohio. But, you know, next door up there in Wisconsin, it's completely the opposite, where you got this right-wing Seventh Circuit doing exactly the opposite and making it harder to vote. So that's why I say the 2014 election is probably going to be won or lost in a court of law before Election Day even happens.
It's a sad story. Brad Friedman, we have about 2 minutes left. I think you've also received something of an honor in that you have a registration fraud company suing you for reporting on its work. Tell us briefly.
Yeah, I'll point people to bradblog.com for the full details, but I'm sure you remember back in 2012, right before the elections and the presidential election, there was an outbreak of Republican voter registration fraud that went from state to state. It started in Florida, in Palm Beach County, Florida. It went to a number of other counties in Florida. Then it went to North Carolina, Colorado, Nevada, Virginia. And they all had to do with one company run by a guy named Nathan Spruill. He had been hired by the Republican Party. They asked him to keep his name off the papers when he set up this company because this guy has a history of having problems with voter registration going back to 2004 when he worked for George Bush. As it turns out, we've got yet another arrest from that 2012 investigation in Florida. Guy last week was arrested on, I think, 9 voter registration fraud charges, and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement has confirmed my reporting that Spruill and his groups had been going out and deceptively registering only Republicans by telling people they were taking a poll, and if they were in favor of Mitt Romney, they'd let them register. If they were in favor of Barack Obama, they'd say, great, thanks for taking our poll, have a nice day. So Florida confirmed my reporting. And the thanks I get now is that Nathan Spruill has pretended that Florida has somehow proven he was right, that his company was not involved in a conspiracy, and therefore I better take down my stories about him from 2012, or I will be hearing from his attorney. That's the threat that this guy is now throwing out at us for reporting accurately on the registration fraud scandal in 2012. And I will not be cowed by folks like that. We will continue reporting accurately with independently verifiable details about what the hell is going on in our democracy over at bradblog.com.
Well, I imagine and hope that will remain only a threat. We've been speaking with Brad Friedman. You can and should check his work out at bradblog.com. Brad, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
It is an honor to be on your show, my friend. Thank you for having me.
A sad postscript. The victory in Ohio discussed earlier has now just been overturned by our wonderful United States Supreme Court. The struggle continues. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.